Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy and my night nurse, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate.
I say night nurse because I'm definitely coming down with something, and it's not just abject misery after our defeat at Old Trafford. So I think that's probably the best place to start off. I asked for some questions on Twitter post-match, and I think we've got like 45 so far.
10 minutes ago.
35 of them are basically, where was our midfield tonight? Why are we picking Winks and Sissoko? Why on earth do Winks and Sissoko still get picked in midfield? How is Sissoko still a thing? So let's start there. What did you think when you saw the lineup?
So someone sent me a reply before I saw it to say, oh, that's a really attacking lineup, before I'd actually seen it myself. And I went to look at it and went, oh yeah, it sort of is. Oh, hang on. That's a Winks and Sissoko midfield. What is all that about? I was thinking sort of before the lineup about what kind of approach generally we would have, you know, were we going to have the sort of the stereotypical Mourinho defensive approach to the game or not, and how the lineup did and didn't reflect that. And then sort of once it clicks that we are playing Winks and Sissoko together, it was, I guess it was why first. And I think the why essentially comes down to, like, you could play either one of those with Dier and it wouldn't have this kind of reaction at all. So the real question is, why isn't Dier playing? And I think that probably just comes down to fitness, to him having played three games in quick succession and clearly lacking fitness in all of those, despite his sort of, I think it's fair to assume, tactical importance. But then sort of the counter to that would be, why didn't he come on at some point? Why didn't he come on at half time, which is what I think along with a lot of people were calling for. Did he not have the freshness to play 45 minutes?
And if that's not, if it's true that he didn't have the freshness to even play 45, then why is he on the bench at all? And I guess the only counter argument to that is, if we're 1-0 up and there's 15 minutes to go, then Eric Dier is quite a handy sub to have to bring on and close out the game. And, you know, stranger things have happened than Mourinho being 1-0 up at a difficult away ground with 15 minutes to go. So there is kind of an argument for it, but it's frustrating to see a potential solution sitting on the bench unused when you're watching the midfield get ripped open over and over and over. So the weirdest thing to me about this, a couple of weird things. Firstly, the fact that I thought Sissoko played quite well against Bournemouth from a right wing berth.
Yeah, really well.
He got a goal. He had an absolute nightmare last 10 minutes. But aside from that, I thought he was pretty good in all areas of his game. To then see him go back into a position where he's not very good and has proven to be not very good, in my opinion, over a long period of time, was very frustrating. The other thing was, I suppose, the fact that he was sort of babysitting Aurier again. And we've seen him do that multiple times over the last year, like covering that right back spot. But it literally left Winks as a one-man midfield at times. With Pochettino, at least you kind of had a diamond, so other players were narrow or tucking in or dropping in and doing things. We literally had Winks there and no one else at times in this match. It was just seemed so odd to me to elect to go that way against a Man U team. You know, McTominay is not a perfect player, but he's an imposing midfielder. He's a useful midfielder. And Fred, I think, has been absolute garbage for United so far. But he was running it tonight, and that's because he was up against the one-man midfield at times.
Yeah, pretty much. I will say that Sissoko does do some Aurier babysitting from right wing, and also that he played in midfield for the last 20 minutes or so against Bournemouth based on subs. I mean, it's very clear from the four games we've had so far that Mourinho wants to really experiment with the lineups and learn through the process and try people out in different positions and in different combinations. So it's not a case, as I sort of jokingly suggested on Twitter, that he firmly believes in the Winks and Sissoko midfield. And you can say, okay, but why is he making an experiment like that in such a big game, etc., etc.? I think all of that is fair. just, you know, that it's not like an absolutely settled on thing, and that we can't analyse it from the assumption that we're going to keep seeing this midfield going forwards, even though we've seen a lot of it going back.
Yeah, way too much. It's really unfortunate that Dyer wasn't fit enough to start. We have to assume he's not fit enough to start.
It does for me underline that what I've been saying all season, which is that, or maybe not quite all season, but most of the season, which is that there is an issue with our squad in midfield and at fullback, which we've seen much less of recently, fair enough, to Mourinho. But there is a midfield problem that we are basically falling apart when we don't have Eric Dyer, and Eric Dyer isn't fit to play four matches.
And also hasn't been consistently good for quite a long time. And even in these three games where we've won with Dyer in the team, he's not been amazing. He's been good. He's been okay, but he's not been amazing. He's definitely not hit his best form yet. And we're kind of hoping that he will, and that continuing to play him will result in his fitness improving, his sharpness getting there, his mental sharpness getting there as well. But that hasn't happened yet, and it's probably still a fair way off happening. In terms of Dyer's fitness, we had a question a while back actually from Hello Newman, who says, do you guys know what tactical periodization is, and can you explain it briefly? And you were keen to do this, Nathan.
So tactical periodization is a combination of two things I'm really into, which is tactics, like football tactics. We know what those are, so we can come back to those later. And periodization, which is like it's a sort of a long, scary word, but it is, it's what it sounds like, right? It's breaking things up into periods, and it's specifically within the realm of athletic fitness. So I do a lot of weightlifting, and I utilize the periodization lens with what I'm doing. And so there is short-term, medium-term, and long-term periodization. So micro, miso, and macro. So short-term, I use a three-day cycle. I do upper body, lower body, then I rest. And then medium-term, I'm going to continue to diversify my workload as I return from injury. And long-term, I'm just going to gradually increase with occasional long rests. In a football context, that is having low-intensity sessions, intermediate-intensity sessions, and high-intensity sessions, and then games. So four different stages there, as well as rests. And so when you combine the concept of football tactics with fitness periodization, you essentially bear both things in mind at the same time. The simplification of this is like, why go for a run when you can run with the ball, right? Why get some cardio work in when you can get cardio work in at the same time as working your dribbling? So your light sessions become like shape work and passing out the back patterns, and your intermediate ones become like pressing patterns, and your hard sessions become the sort of 3, 5, and 7 a-sided games. So that is tactical periodization. And this is something that Mourinho was very much at the spearhead of about 20 years ago, and maybe not quite that long ago, 15 years ago. And now it is dominant across the majority of elite football.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why people's insistence that Mourinho will just continue to play the same first 11 over and over and over is just wrong. I mean, he won't do that, will he?
No, there will be rotation. So Pochettino was also very much a believer and practicer of tactical periodization. I think that Jesus Perez was like a leading expert in periodization. But the way that staffing group worked was to absolutely at all times maximize the like athletic ceiling of our team. So they would be pushed up to, but not over the red line of when your muscles start to break down and deteriorate. And so because of asking for greater intensity, you require greater rest, which means, you know, fullbacks not playing twice in a week. Mourinho brings things down quite away from there, which means he's asking for less intensity, asking for less physical strength. And as a result, you can play twice in a week much more often. Which means that we won't anymore sort of run teams away like we have done in the past under Pochettino, like especially when we have the, like, again, we go back to macro periodization, the sort of peaks of, we're going to peak in December and we're going to have a fitness peak in sort of March, April. And those are the times where we've like just run teams off the pitch. We've blown them away because they couldn't keep up with us. So we won't have that anymore under Mourinho, but we may have a greater general freshness where we aren't burning out on the short term, which is where you can't play twice in a week, or burning out in the long term where you maybe fall off at the end of the season or take quite a while to get warmed up, to get going at the beginning of the season.
And that feels like quite a sensible use for what is now an ageing squad, to be honest. Particularly given the fullback situation where essentially with Davis out, we've got problems on the left and we already had a problem on the right. So you can't really rotate the fullbacks game to game to game anyway. They're going to have to do a lot more work as it stands. The centre-backs, Vertonghen is starting to look really creaky to me. I'm not sure this left-back experiment's going to work. But there are other kind of issues with players in our team not looking like the physical specimens they once did. Kane's obviously the one that's been cited a lot, and I think that's valid, but also, you know, Dyer can't rely on his fitness like he used to. Harry Winks can't rely on his fitness like he used to. So even the players that aren't necessarily old are kind of problematic physically in some respects. So giving them less work seems like a sensible way forward, I think.
Definitely. I think that when Pochettino was talking about, you know, what's the phrasing he used about sort of drastic changes, a painful rebuild, partly that is, yes, players are getting tired of him and players are getting tired of his workload, but he also has this general preference for young players because they can handle that higher level, higher intensity workload. If you look at him and then like sort of other similar managers like Klopp in terms of training intensity, they predominantly work with younger players. Again, partly because you have to have that sort of youthful recovery rate in order to keep playing under him. But I think quite possibly because that style of intensity just breaks bodies down and footballers are like finished by the time they're 28, because that you just take on these muscle injuries and impact injuries from, you know, full pelt running into each other all the time. And from a squad building perspective, from an ownership perspective, is that maybe a manager you want in your squad if he's going to run all of your assets down to a half life?
I mean, you're really shitting on Pochettino here. I didn't expect this.
No, that I don't necessarily agree. I just think that it can be an interesting lens to examine things. I think it's an interesting question, and something that as time goes on, it will be easier and more interesting to look back on.
And it'll be fascinating to see if Mourinho references this at some point, because I mean, if he believes it to be a thing, he definitely will reference it. he won't shy away from making comments about squad burnout, I'm sure. Let's go back briefly to the United game. What do you think Mourinho would have learnt from this match?
Even if you're in desperate needs, a Winks and Sissoko midfield just isn't going to do it.
Yeah, and I think if he could have his time again, then Ndombele would start if he was fit, or, you know, Oliver Skip even could have started and added something to that midfield. It's just not a viable option. It's just really not a viable option. You can't do that, particularly in a game away at Old Trafford, where you're probably going to have periods where you need to sit in and just weather the storm. They're not capable of defending effectively. What did you make of Vertonghen this evening?
No particular strong thoughts. I do think that, yeah, if he was beginning to age too much to play centre-back under Pochettino, then even playing under Mourinho as a full-back is, or, you know, a very defensive full-back is going to be an issue thing. But I think if you look back, like, 9 months, maybe not even that, to his Dortmund performance as a, like, aggressive wing-back, I think that he is particularly suffering from what the whole squad is suffering from, which is, yeah, going back to the conversation we just had, where you're asked to play and train a very high intensity across multiple sessions and all that sort of stuff. And then if you aren't applying yourself because you don't buy into the current manager, then you sort of get the worst of both worlds, which is you don't build up the right level of fitness and you're not fresh either. So the whole squad, and that's what we've seen from these late drop-offs towards the end of game, not so much tonight, but across the first three games, is you're seeing these drop-offs where after 70 minutes we're shattered because the team isn't fit. I do think that we will get there. So I think the Vertonghen question, like with the Dyer question, I think that is one to have in sort of a couple of months' time, probably 6 weeks' time, to sort of see how their fitness is coming along.
Yeah, I think that's a very sensible take. I I was really disappointed with his performance, if I'm honest. I thought his passing was absolutely atrocious. And I kind of, I thought when Davis got injured, we've got a ready-made replacement here, and it solves the problem of who we play at centre-back, because it means that Sanchez will continue with Alderweireld, and Vertonghen can just slot into the Davis role, use his excellent distribution to feed balls into midfield like Davis did in that first game. But that did not happen tonight, and, you know, Daniel James gave him a bit of a nightmare as well, in terms of, he just looked so sluggish up against James. It was not pretty to watch. James will do that to lots of left-backs, I'm sure. He's lightning fast. I suppose we ought to touch on how good Marcus Rashford was. I think that might be one of the best I've ever seen Rashford play.
Yeah, do you
recall seeing him that good before?
Probably not, especially like with when he's not been given like so much room to run into behind, which is where he generally thrives at his absolute best. The fact that he was playing like that mostly in front of a defence, you could say that that's his best performance. I do think that we defended him poorly as a team.
I did too, but he had this kind of aura about him where he would get the ball and just have time and space, and then you'd find that Sissoko would be dragged over to him and Aurier would be there and he'd still have time and space. And it really struck me that he is now looking like the elite player that he promised to be. I was very, very impressed. The first goal, though, are we blaming Gazzaniga for that?
No, because not entirely, because like we allowed Rashford to get the shot off in the first place, and you could be really lenient on Paolo and say that the shot swerved horribly in front of him, but like, yeah, it wasn't like the highest XG chance, and he's failed to cover right in the bottom corner.
He took it early, Rashford, because he was able to, and that probably caught Gazzaniga slightly off guard, but having got a hand to it, he should have kept it out. Having said that, he did make some really good saves in this game, so it's wrong just to sort of say we lost because of Gazzaniga.
We were outplayed in this game.
Yeah, I mean, we were. Not as much, in terms of XG, not as much as it looked on the eye, so 1.48 for United to 0.54 for us.
Okay.
So about a 2-1 game, basically. So the scoreline was about right. But it kind of just felt that way because we were so hapless at times in attack. Having said that, we had that absolute moment of magic from Dele, who is just completely rejuvenated and trying things again. I personally thought that touch and finish, probably up there with the Crystal Palace goal that he scored.
Big shout.
Yeah, the thing about the Palace ones, it's two touches. It's two feathery, gorgeous touches.
Yeah.
But it's the lack of space that he has to work with in this instance. He's catching so many players off guard with his
flick and turn.
The intelligence and the appreciation of space is just beautiful. I don't think there are many players that could have done what he did in that moment. It was such a great goal, and I really thought it was going to be ruled out for handball.
Oh man, yeah.
It was a tight call.
I don't think it should have been a tight call, but it felt like a tight call.
Yeah, I mean, if you're calling that as handball, the rules say now, from an attacking perspective, if the ball touches your arm, it's handball.
I think that rule has to like acknowledge the reality that your arms are attached to the sides of your body. You can't like like if the ball hits you in the side of the arm and the side of your arm is attached, like, it, you know, it's like a leg before wicket scenario. Yeah, if your hand is in the way of your body and the ball is going to hit your body, you've not gained an advantage.
But it's not, though, is it? It's black and white in terms of an attacking sense. That's everyone's frustration with this new handball law. It's kind of going a little too far. So is there anything else to talk about in terms of this game, or do we just move on? It was horrible, wasn't it?
It was really bad. I think that it is worth moving on. I'm going to say some things probably later about the Bournemouth game that are quite negative, but I think specifically for this game, this is a big ask in terms of Mourinho, and I don't mind giving him the pass on, you know, having your fourth game in charge being at Old Trafford. That's, you know, you could give him a pass for this.
And I do think we have to acknowledge that although United haven't been good this season, they did play well tonight. They played really well. All of their players played the best they've played for a while, and, you know, they were motivated to play against their former manager, I'm sure. Doesn't make it much easier to take, though.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, let's talk about Bournemouth. What did you make generally of that match?
Well, I was there for that one. I was behind our goal for the first half and their goal for the second half. I enjoyed it because I got to see a win in person for the first time in quite a while, but I wasn't as high on it as everyone else.
Okay, and why was that?
I think because already 3 games into the Mourinho era, I was beginning to see the deprogramming of the ideas that had been achieved under Pochettino in terms of attack.
There was a lot of long ball, and it worked wonderfully for us twice.
It did.
But then equally, it failed to work against United.
It did.
and I presume this is what you're getting at. It's like, when you're playing long ball, it's high-risk stuff. So high-risk, high-reward. You're completely gifting possession away if it goes badly, and you're allowing a team to then rebuild and rebuild. If it goes well, you can catch a team off guard and you can score 2 goals like we did against Bournemouth, and that's great.
We really did catch them off guard. We really, that was a great example of like the synergy of the sort of two different managers here, where like we pass short and slow, short and slow, short and slow, sort of lulling them into that sort of full sense, and then bam, long, catch them off guard. The thing is, as that short and slow thing disappears, and the idea of there being any threat behind our short play gradually dissolves into the distance, and all we have to create is the long ball and the working across out wide, teams will only need to be switched on for that threat, and then we will lose that sort of diversification of attacks, which is where we're in this sweet spot right now, and we will just have punting the ball at Delhi from a distance, saying, Delhi, please receive this, flick it over the defender's head and make something magic happen out of nowhere.
You're absolutely right. And I think the only way we're going to get kind of that short passing threat back is by playing probably either Eriksen or Lo Celso. Would you agree?
That would certainly help. Like, take a positive step back and like talk about like the West Ham game. Like, that was a game where we didn't play with Eriksen or Lo Celso. Like, we played with Delhi as our most creative player, and we created a lot of chances. That was like a real positive there. But I think that you could say, like, if that's the sort of the foundation, and you add a true playmaker on top of that, then surely that there's room. But I think that the systemic possession play will dissolve underneath, and it won't matter that much, or it won't be enough to have an Eriksen or a Lo Celso in the team if they are like we saw previously at United with Mourinho, where Pogba there was their only means of creating any goals, and it was just, you know, please make all of our attacks for us and carry this immense mental burden of being the sole creator on this team. And I think that that's not, if we look at Eriksen's history with like shirking away in times of need, if he becomes the one who has this huge mental burden, he will shrink, you know, he will fail to deliver.
I suppose the counter argument to this is that it's been 4 games and
yeah,
he's had such limited time with the players so far, and there have been a number of injuries, so we have to give him an opportunity to establish his own build-up patterns, his own methods. We've already seen pre-game he's kind of making those rectangles on the training pitch where he's trying to do something. He's trying to install some kind of philosophy that's different to what Pochettino is trying to achieve. I think we just have to trust for a while that he's doing that, and it will take some time to be clear to us. I guess that the starkness of the long ball makes it sort of stand out, because it's something that was apparent in Pochettino's early Spurs teams, with Alderweireld in particular and Dele on the end being a thing, but that's not been a thing for a couple of years, really. So to see it suddenly back was both exciting when it first happened, and then tonight kind of a little frustrating because it was just constant. Let's talk about Dele briefly. How do you feel about his resurgence? Is this simply a timing thing, or do you feel like this is a direct result of the way that Mourinho is using him?
No, I think it's Mourinho's man management predominantly. I do think that there was a sort of a strong timing coincidence there where he was just sort of coming back into it. But he definitely took like a leap between the like Everton and West Ham games, didn't he? And also the change of context that he's playing in that we have had some more control over games and he's had better service. But I think mostly the change of manager mentally has given him a confidence boost or a kick up the backside or a combination of the two that is just making him perform as if any surrounding context is irrelevant.
So 4 goals and an assist in the 4 games so far, and he's probably been our best attacking player in every game.
Definitely.
You can't have hoped for any more than that in terms of Dele's kind of resurgence. Do you think that comes at a cost with other players though?
Possibly, yeah. If we go back to what we were saying a second ago about like possession ideas falling apart and reliance on a limited different means of attacking plays, and similarly, if like Dele is the attacker and everyone else is just sort of falling to his service and his ideas, then if everyone else becomes secondary, both in like actual planned drilled ideas, but also like emotionally, if he's the man and everyone else can sort of fall by the wayside that way, yeah.
It's such a tough one, isn't it? This it kind of reinforces how difficult it is to keep an entire squad happy, and what a good job Pochettino did for basically 3 years of achieving that. And therefore you can be quite forgiving when it comes to Pochettino's final year, where it seems to have crumbled somewhat. But it's tough. It's really tough. Particularly when they're not your own players. These are inherited players. And that brings me on to Lo Celso and Ndombele and Sessegnon. We had loads of questions about those three. Ricky from the Fighting Cock said, do Sess and Ndombele and Lo Celso have a future at Spurs considering their lack of involvement to date?
I wouldn't worry just yet. I guess like we would like to have seen Ndombele today, but no, and he's been saying like the right things about Sessegnon, obviously. But I would say just give him a while to experiment with his lineups and see who he wants to put where and with who. I think it's too, like, there's been a lot of reaction about Lo Celso. Oh, Lo Celso's out the team. Oh, we're not going to buy Lo Celso. He's going to go back at the end of the loan, all that sort of stuff. And I think that like it's too early for that under a new manager.
I agree. I definitely think Lo Celso could start on the right in the next game though.
Yeah.
I think there's no reason not to start him on the right in the next game, because I personally don't think Lucas has been that great. I also, as well as Sissoko did against Bournemouth, I don't think there's any drop-off in playing Lo Celso there. I actually think the chances are he'll improve us significantly, so it's worth testing. You could even play Sessegnon there.
Yeah, or Eriksen. But I think definitely Burnley, you want to get one of Eriksen and Lo Celso win for that one, don't you?
Yeah, you don't want a blunt object in that game. You need players who can think and cycle the ball and tempt them out of position, because that's, you know, Burnley is so stubborn and so dogged. They will head and hack everything clear for 90 minutes happily. That's the dream for them. That's kind of how they want. That's what they want to reduce you to. Yeah. A team that will just chuck balls into the box out of desperation. If we go down the long ball route against Burnley, it won't end well. Let's put it that way.
God, imagine.
And what have you made of Aurier so far under Mourinho?
Yeah, I guess that this was his first sort of non-brilliant game against United tonight. We talked about it in the last episode. Sort of, you mentioned the idea of his role being simplified. I definitely buy into that. I don't know. I still think that like there are very much mistakes within him, and like there are still like catastrophic mistakes within him. But I think if you can get him down to like two or three red cards and penalties a season, then there's a footballer there.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking about this tonight, and I think he has done really well so far in these four matches. I actually thought he was one of the better players tonight. Okay. I know he definitely switched off for the opening goal. Like, I would say that first Rashford goal is at least 50% on Aurier for me, because he just stopped tracking his man, and that is to a degree inexcusable. Having said that, he actually did some pretty good things on the ball. And what I was thinking to myself was, he's basically playing as a right winger. Would we be better off just playing a right winger in Aurier's position? Like, if you want to play Sissoko wide, play Sissoko there, and then play Lo Celso ahead of that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, he's that bad defensively that it's pointless to worry about having him as a right back, because he's an awful right back. But if he's playing right wing, is he better than an actual right winger? I don't know. That's what I was going over in my head while I was watching him play today. Anyway, it's tough. he's not going to pick Walker Peters. I suspect he wasn't even on the bench today. He's been on the bench a couple of times, but if he was going to play him, I think he'd have played him by now.
The being removed from the bench is a pretty deadly sign for him, for his squad position, isn't it?
It's not good. He's got to go in January for his own sake. And then we have Son. So Mourinho said a couple of days ago that he's fallen in love with Son, and there's been lots of talk about how a player with Son's high work ethic and positivity and attacking flair, that it will be well suited to a Mourinho team. Do you buy into that one?
Yeah, so the two of us independently picked up on the number of tackles he made against Bournemouth.
Yeah, that was weird.
And also, like, specifically that he was making them, like, deep in his own half. He's playing this sort of, like, the defensive left winger role, which is, you could argue, is like not the best use of his talents. Like, if he's gonna stop getting in towards goal, where obviously he has some like creative finishing, especially first time and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely working out for him generally at the moment, isn't it?
I feel happy with Son. He's got better as the season's gone on. I do think he's one of our best players now, and one of our, he's our clutch player, isn't he? He's our player, and like Dele is now as well. Like, you do trust them to pull something out when others aren't playing well. It used to be Kane every time, and Kane's still capable, but Son's, you kind of put money on Son to do something when the chips are down.
Do you want to talk about Kane?
Yeah, this is where I was leading. Okay. I would say, I thought from the first game that what we see from Kane now under Mourinho is a much more limited number nine game. And that's not what's happened. Like, he's dropped back deeper and deeper over these past four games, to the point where today, and maybe it's because the midfield was so horrendous, but he was basically in midfield for a chunk of the game. And that's not where I want to see Kane. It's very simplistic, but he's a brilliant striker who is at his best when he's in the penalty box getting shots away. And if we're putting him in a position where, okay, sure, we know he's got very good creative vision and passing, but if we're putting him in a position where he's not going to get an opportunity to get in the box and get shots away, we're limiting both his best attributes and our own potential goal threat. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's probably more out of necessity than poor design. I think that we've seen, not in the last game, but generally we've seen a Tottenham who can get the ball into the right areas, and he isn't there because he can't get there in time. And I think that, like, he is failing the test right now. The test being, are you the same player you were before you were injured and then Tottenham became bad?
Yeah, I'm not willing to say that just yet, because I want to wait for us to have a proper functional midfield.
Sure.
Then I'll feel like I can make a firm judgment either way. I'll tell you one thing, though. I don't want Kane to play against Bayern Munich.
No, so are we fixed into first and second qualifying for our group? I should know this.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
I think we need some full-on rotation against Bayern. There's still some time between Bayern and the horrible run of the 22nd, 26th, 28th, okay, three games in 6 days. But after Bayern, we play Wolves on the 15th.
Yep.
You know, Wolves are a really good team, and they're just coming into their peak at the moment. What we don't want is to play the best 11 in both of those matches. That would be a huge error. I basically want Troy Parrott to play against Bayern, I think.
Yeah, I would be up for that. I essentially don't care. Obviously, for fans who travel to Germany, they want to see, and like forked out a ton of money and everything, they want to see their team represented. But from a purely strategic point of view, yeah, I would keep Kane and Dele in England and use this as a chance to experiment with the side and see what, you know, talking again about Mourinho sort of having to learn about the squads in real time. Yeah, you know, give Sessegnon and Lo Celso and everyone else a run out to see what they're doing.
Exactly, exactly. All right, Nath, we'll leave it there, mate. I feel like there's going to be a lot more talking points this time next week. Particularly if they do rotate some players, it could be quite interesting to talk on that. Yeah, tonight was not fun. I feel really down after that because I kind of
talked yourself into it.
I really had, and I've been really enjoying basically everything that Mourinho's done so far. And then I see this team selection and this performance. The thing I've got to resolve myself with and to tell myself is Dyer must not have been fit, and Dyer is a really important cog now. And then perhaps I could feel better. But just the idea of playing with Soko again really upset me.
Maybe we'll buy a defensive midfielder in January, Chris. How about that?
That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and SoundCloud @DLindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.